Good morning and welcome to the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks, 25th day of February 2021. My name is Peter Wickham, in this morning again with Mr. Dennis Johnson, and we're both here with you until 2 p.m. Our call number, 434-1790. You can use the chat, 266-IVOB. I should probably have access to that shortly. And then, of course, you can use the WhatsApp, the email, peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Starting today's program on a somewhat more somber note, we have to, I want to use the opportunity to convey my condolences to the station manager, Mr. David Ellis, on the passing of his brother. I want to join with other talk show hosts, other moderators, as well as you and the general public, on behalf of my family and myself, to convey sincere condolences to David on the passing of his brother. The news was somewhat of a surprise. I was unaware that he was ill, and I would want to reflect with the rest of you. I didn't know the individual, but certainly I know what it is like to have lost a brother, and it is the most uncomfortable period. So David, at this point in time, our thoughts are with you. And I also want to note that you tomorrow will be retiring, and certainly tomorrow's program will be one in which myself and others will join with you. I understand that there is an all-star cast that will reach back in to the early days of Down to Brass Tacks, and I will feel honored to join with some of my former Brass Tacks hosts, and we will reflect on an outstanding career, really, which has lasted several decades, which comes to an end tomorrow. Perhaps we will see David again in a different incarnation, but we'll see. So tomorrow's program will be a must listen, and that will be 10 o'clock as usual, go until 2. Feel free to join us and pay your parting words to Mr. David Ellis. I listened to David Gill, which is another David, and he was talking about his views on the COVID situation, and he made reference to the vaccine campaigns of old, and referenced my mother, Patricia Wickham, who was initially attached to the central clinic, which would be Enmore. The Enmore clinic was the one where so many hundreds and in the thousands of our young people were vaccinated, because it was essentially the central clinic in the days when healthcare in Barbados was highly centralized. My mother had the distinguished responsibility of vaccinating babies and other young people before they were able to go into school. Perhaps you would understand my partiality towards the vaccination process, because I was part of that. I remember fondly the polio campaign that happened in the 1970s. I met a gentleman called Charles at Eagle Hall, who many of you who were familiar with the Goodland area may have known. Charles had been stricken by polio as a child, and as a result, he could not walk upright. Bright guy. He came to an early demise, and he suffered a lot as a result of his handicap over the years. My mother was involved in the polio campaign, and I remember her explaining to me in very simple language, this is to ensure that many others of you don't end up like Charles. And I watched that campaign go on all across Barbados, where they went into schools and they vaccinated children using the method where they put some drops on a piece of sugar, which we used to teach some of the sugar as well. But anyhow, that's another matter. But it was effective. And there was also the measles campaign. I believe the vaccine was developed in the 70s as well. I had had mine before I went into school, but others who didn't had to have theirs at school. So I remember it well. The question of ID cards has come into focus again. We have vaccination issues, and we have ID cards issues. And it reminds me that these really are all about fundamental rights, rights to privacy, and rights generally, which are weighed against the public interest. So yes, you do have fundamental rights based on religion, medical circumstances, personal choice, and other, but the issue becomes complex. And we need to discuss, where do we draw the line in the sand and say that public interest is more important than your personal rights, and how do we deal with it? And it's interesting that this has come up also regarding this whole question of ID cards and the privacy issues, especially as ID cards will become microchipped. and will contain, possibly contain questions like, or information like your fingerprint. I think that there needs to be an evaluation in terms of these issues. And I believe that these are conversations that we have to have in Barbados, whether we like it or not. In France, currently, the Muslims are precluded from wearing a hijab, and Christians are precluded from wearing a neck cross, crucifix, because religious symbols are not allowed, because France is a secular society. And that has been uncomfortable, especially for the Muslims who want to wear the full face covering. In Switzerland, we've had conversations there about the idea of a person being able to take Swiss citizenship without shaking the hand of a male, because the culture of several Muslims precludes the women from touching a man. The Swiss are, however, saying, if you want our citizenship, you have to do two things. One, you have to learn to swim. And secondly, you have to shake the hand of the person who is granting you the citizenship, which may or may not be a man, as the case may be. And the Muslims have basically been told, look, you have to decide if your personal right to your religion that precludes those things is more important than your receiving Swiss citizenship. And that's basically how it goes. I remember the issue of fingerprints very well, because it goes back to the time of the Americans' first decision to introduce fingerprinting as a requirement for entry into the United States. And I remember I was on campus at the time, and I had taken a decision that I will not be giving my fingerprint to anyone, because a fingerprint is associated with criminal activity. So I would decline the right to go into the United States of America because I'm not interested in handing over my fingerprint. We had one of the assistant secretaries of state, I don't remember the name, came to Barbados, and he made a speech at the University of the West Indies. And he said a couple of things which I thought were important at that time. He was saying that, look, you know, you have a right not to give your fingerprints to the American government if you feel so inclined. American citizens are not being forced to do so, but that's another conversation that we'll come to. But he said, look, you know, if you don't want to transit Miami en route to the Cayman Islands or Bermuda, and those are the only two ways you can get to Cayman Islands or Bermuda, then you won't give your fingerprints. If you don't want to go to Disneyland, you know, there's always Euro Disney, and you can go there instead. So, you know, you won't have to give your fingerprints. If you need medical attention, you can always avoid the United States. You can go to Canada, you can go to the United Kingdom. It may be more expensive, but you know, you do have the option if you don't want to give your fingerprints. The point that has been made by him is one that has stuck with me. And this is that there is a cost for principle. And I think that in all instances, if you're going to stand up for principle, whether it be vaccination, whether it be fingerprinting, you have to be prepared to bear the cost. There's a social cost, and in some instances, a personal cost. And we have to ask ourselves whether that is important or more important than outweighs. Years later, I was involved in the situation in St. Kitts and Nevis, where I was part of a team that was implementing an ID card system similar to what is being done in Barbados now. They were ahead of the curve. It's about 10 years ago. And I was fascinated at the fact that we included a fingerprint option. And so many people declined. They said they were not comfortable with the fingerprint because, again, they felt that they were being forced to do it. We made several arguments in favor of the fact that, look, you know, there are instances in which people have brothers, siblings that are close in age, look alike, and it can create some challenges in terms of verification as to who they are. People were not convinced. Some people gave them and some people didn't. But the reality is that all of them who didn't, a lot of them have subsequently gotten American visas, and they give the Americans their fingerprints. So these are the kinds of situations that we will have. I realize I'm out of time, but I do want to raise a very quick point regarding this whole question of, the manner in which our judiciary and our magistracy specifically, because I think the magistrates are not really part of the judiciary, are dealing with this human condition. And I've seen some very egregious situations presenting themselves over the past couple of days. We had the case of a father and son that were locked up pending sentencing because they breached COVID regulations. Now, you have two people who broke the law, who admitted to have broken the law, and who were willing to subject themselves to the same treatment that other lawbreakers have received, which is a fine. Those people were locked up pending sentencing. Now, I've noted that Andrew Pilgrim has raised that issue with the High Court. The High Court has offered them bail, and the matter will be dealt with shortly. But I'm talking about a principle here, and a principle that speaks to this whole question of how we treat to one another. I saw another situation that presented itself a few days ago where a gentleman who has no water or electricity has been fined. And you fine the person $1,250 for breaching regulations, which meant he was going out to get something to eat. I don't know a single magistrate now in Barbados that does not have electricity and running water. And indeed, that is not being paid on a regular basis. And I'm just saying that I understand why we have laws and regulations in this country. But I think that there has to be an extent to which justice is tempered with mercy, on which there's an understanding of the human condition that is leading all of us into some very, very strange behaviors and whatnot. We've had two suicides in Barbados since this whole COVID thing began. And we don't know whether they're related. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But it has put several of us under considerable stress. And there are people who are feeling it financially. And I'm saying that how, in all good conscience, can you take someone who does not have the luxury of running water in their house, who does not have the luxury of electricity attached to their house, and impose a financial burden on them that you know very well that they are not going to be able to bear because they simply can't manage it? You know, how can you take a father and son and subject them to prison? Prison is a serious thing. Now, in Barbados, the last line of defense is prison. If you commit murder, you go to prison. If you commit robbery, you go to prison. So you take someone who has breached COVID regulations, you lock up that person for 3 days. I just think it's unconscionable. And I don't doubt the good intentions of the magistracy. It's not about that. It's about the fact that I think that we have to be careful that we do not get carried away and we do not lose our humanity in all of this. Because these are people. These are people. And many of these people have not been as fortunate as myself to be able to say, I have running water and electricity, and the magistrates that have the same thing. I have a salary, a reliable salary that they can look to at the end of the month that can pay for all of these things. Many people have serious challenges that they are facing while they're dealing with all of these other things. And I think that we have to be careful that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Anyhow, we need to get on. Apparently, we will break at some point in time during the course of the morning to have a discourse, well, to listen to some remarks from Prime Minister Motley, who is at Morris Bayer Polyclinic, and she will make some remarks from that clinic. So we will break for that. And I'm also hoping to have an intervention with Sandy at some point in time during the course of the morning to discuss this whole situation of the 11 plus exam. I also hope that somebody will call me and ask to talk about this whole question of the DLP list of candidates. So 434-1790. Dr. Brastad, let's take a first call. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, morning. How are you doing, sir?
All
you off your mark quickly.
All I can tell you is welcome to the dark side. Because look at how we can start this morning with you and I agreeing about certain things.
Okay.
Which is
what? This is the core issue?
Yeah.
Well, right. The core issue for sure. The core issue as well. And also in terms of the conversation which we're having about the Swiss and how they are insisting that religion cannot play a part in terms of whether or not you get...
This is a better conversation than that.
Hello? Right,
because I'm listening.
Right. Wendy, I'm going to agree with you about something, which is the situation with the Rastafari and Barbados and marijuana. Okay? And because my position is that they should not be given any special dispensation in order to use marijuana for sacramental purposes. Breaking up or something. Hello?
No, I think that we have somebody on the line as well, because I want to have a discussion with Sandy, and you're hearing her go through initially. But we're going to talk to you first, so you carry on.
Let me see
if we can get Sandy to mute her mic.
No problem.
Okay.
The no group in Barbados should be given any special dispensation to do anything based on religion, in my opinion. Because it should not deny the same rights that they have, I should have. So therefore, if you want to say that Barbadians are free to use marijuana, or they're free to sell marijuana, or what have you, then the Rastafari will be able to also do that as well. But to say that they can do it, that they can use it for their sacramental purposes, and I then am denied the ability to use it for whatever purposes I want, is wrong. Because there has to be separation of church and state. We talk about it, but then we don't practice it. We start to involve ideas about religion in terms of what we have established in the Constitution. Mm. And the Constitution specifically separates the things. It doesn't involve church or anything.
Cyprian is two sides to it, and I think that you know my view on it. I feel that we should adopt a liberal position that allows people to smoke as they please. But but even if we set that view aside, which is something that you and I agree on, the two positions. I remember Gonzalez talking about the fact that in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, they're moving towards this idea of being used in a tabernacle, free and you know, use in a tabernacle, a limited use in a tabernacle. And then he made the point subsequently that the definition of what is a tabernacle is very, very loose. So your porch can be a tabernacle, and indeed it can be a tabernacle now, and then a few hours later it can be a porch. A person can decide they want to worship according to Rastafari traditions at 11 o'clock. And then at 12 o'clock, they can go back to normal life. And he talked about tourists that may want to come off of a boat and they may want to sit in a tabernacle for an hour or two, smoke some ganja, observe what could be considered a religious practice, and then go back to the boat and live a normal life thereafter. So the point is that even within the context of what is allowed now, the looseness with which religion is defined is something that I think can be beneficial for those who want to opt in or opt out. The other side of it is that, look, you know, I'm not a believer myself, but I do feel that if Christians have the right to practice their belief, which is the symbolic drinking of bread and wine, the body and the blood of Christ, then there's really no reason why other groups should not have it as well. And, you know, we don't have bizarre traditions like anybody trying to do a human sacrifice or an animal sacrifice. So what we basically have is someone saying that they want to smoke some ganja in pursuit of their religious thing. And I don't see the problem there, even in a secular society.
See, but this is my point. You cannot start talking about any religion, whether it is Rastafari, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Muslim or whatever. It is the right of the individual to practice the religion of their choice that is important. So therefore, you have the right to practice the religion of your choice as a Barbadian, because these are the privileges and the rights that you have as a Barbadian. So therefore, you should have the right as a Barbadian whether to smoke marijuana or not, if it is within the laws of Barbados. Right?
Which is so fine.
You can use marijuana. And we've considered that marijuana is something that can be used. It can be used by a Barbadian, regardless of religion, right? Regardless in whatever capacity. This is my point. You need to separate this idea that there's certain things that are done based on religion. So therefore, when it comes in to whether a Muslim chooses to wear hijab or not, that's fine. You can wear the hijab or not. But if the rules of the country say that in order to, for identification purposes, you have to remove a face covering or what have you, right, for the authorities, for that brief moment, then you have to do that. Because the rules of the country take precedent over the rules of the religion. You're free to practice the religion you choose, right? But once it comes in conflict with the rules and directives of the country, that's a different story.
Cyprian, it gets complicated in France, eh? Because I live opposite a Catholic school, ironically. So I look out my window and I see a cross, a crucifix, which is attached to the building. Mm-hmm. Now, the French are very particular about their buildings, so you cannot alter or change the outside of a building in any way. So while a person who is teaching cannot go into that school with a crucifix because it's a public school, the building has a crucifix on it outside, which cannot be touched because it is considered part of the heritage and whatnot. So you can't do anything with the outside of a building. In the latter case, what they have decided is that the heritage of the country is bound up in religious symbols, some of which cannot be touched or desecrated in any way. However, a person can put on that same crucifix and go inside the school and teach. I find it odd. Okay, I think that we're going to have to break now, Cyprian, and go to the Morris Bayer Polyclinic, where the Prime Minister is about to make some remarks. So we're going to have to run. Sorry to have interrupted you.
Thank you, Peter. We're standing by to join the manager of news, Stetson Babb, at the Morris Bayer Polyclinic. The Prime Minister is there and should be shortly joining him. Stetson, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning to you, Dennis. I was sound a bit muffled, so I'm speaking to you through two of my masks. But the PM is not quite ready, maybe in a couple of minutes or so. I know she's having her photo up now with the photojournalists from especially the printed media. And I'm told that then she'll come and make some address. Of course, you know tonight, at a time yet to be announced, the PM is going to address the nation in relation to the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. And everyone is waiting to hear what she will say, whether the country, the economy and the businesses are allowed to open back up or whether this lockdown will be extended. Those questions, I expect, should be answered by tonight. She's here with the touring the Morris Bayer Polyclinic in St. Peter, along with the Minister of Health, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Bostic, and other officials involved from the Ministry of Health. Right, the PM shall speak to us. Roy Morrison from our press secretary is right next to me. Very shortly, right? So she met inside with the officials here, and then she came to have a photo op. And then she will, we're told she will make some remarks. Of course, Morris Bayer Polyclinic is one of the several polyclinics and other facilities that are being used as vaccination centers in this national vaccination drive. And so, like, in fact, I saw it, believe it, the last COVID update yesterday said there was then just over 22,000 vaccinations. That was up until, that should be up until probably Tuesday, but I'm told that they did, that it's now something around 25,000, right, vaccinations?
25,000.
Yeah, more than 25,000. Which means they did, what they've done, what, 23,000 vaccinations just yesterday alone?
More than that.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. So the Prime Minister, who I believe has placed a lot of emphasis, not believe, no, a lot of emphasis now on the vaccination drive in relation to how we respond to this pandemic in the face of community spread. And somewhere, I believe it's like more than just over 2,900 confirmed cases in Barbados right now and 32 deaths as of yesterday. And I know that she's placing a lot of emphasis in the circuit here now on the vaccination drive as part of our response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So she'll come and speak to us in a short while. So Dennis, I'll stay alert and I will alert you in the next few minutes when she comes to speak to you.
Thank you very much, Stetson. We'll be rejoining Stetson Babb in just a short while.